What does it mean to be a teenager? Often when we think of a teenager, we get the image of a sedentary young person sleeping, texting, or playing video games all day. Or we might get the image of an overloaded adolescent who's trying to juggle the pressures of school, sports, activities, and more. Just what truth lies behind these stereotypes? I'm Erwin Gratz, and today we're going to examine the life of a teenager and why we can't or shouldn't pigeonhole this entire age group into one category. Joining me in the studio to talk about the sometimes secret, sometimes not so secret lives of a teenager, Dr. Doug Robbins. He's director of child and adolescent psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. Also joining us in studio are two real live teenagers, Caroline Levy, she's a senior at Falmouth High School, and Mike Masick, he's a senior at Portland High School. Of course, we invite you to join our conversation. Email us at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at MaineCalling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Is it harder now than ever to be a teenager? This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by Cross Jewelers, offering more than 2,000 ways to show your love upstairs in downtown Portland and online at crossjewelers.com. And by Sweetser, seeking mentors for children with mental and behavioral health needs. Learn more at sweetser.org.
And good afternoon. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratzin again for Keith Shortall, still under the weather today. And we're going to talk today about being a teenager. We're going to get some firsthand experience. And we're also going to talk to Dr. Doug Robbins, Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. And I wanted to start with you. We talked about it then in the opening, some of the stereotypes that society applies to teenagers. So my first question is, do teenagers have a different view of themselves than we adults do?
Boy, that's a tough question. I think people have a little bit of a different view of the world and themselves at all different stages of development as we go through life. I think teenagers are in this interesting crux of having this world of possibilities ahead of them, but then a lot of things that are very frustrating in the way, perhaps, you know, that a lot of challenges, a lot of hurdles to get over. Life these days, I'm curious what Caroline and Mike have to say about this, is very challenging. There have always been stresses and strains in every point in history, but I think there are a lot of pressures on kids today. Life is very competitive. There are sort of fewer spots down the road in the economy that you can fit into, fewer niches that you can fit into. And if you're not blessed with real good skills in some ways, you don't anticipate or see ahead of you the smooth sailing that maybe the kids did back when I was in the golden age when I was a teenager.
All right. Well, you know, we're going to find that out in a little bit. What is going on biologically, psychologically at this age?
Well, a lot of things. One is, yes, biologically there are things going on. We like it's to tend to think that physical development is kind of over and done with, but in fact there are changes continuing in the brain into the early 20s. There's sort of what they call myelination or development of these sheaths around the nerve pathways that makes them function correctly is still happening in the forebrain, the area that's involved with abstract thinking and complex reasoning and priority setting. And these are things that we see kids have difficulty with. I mean, all of us have difficulty with some of these things. But the idea of kind of more complex thinking is an ability that biologically is still evolving at this point. Psychologically, there's certainly pressures. You're kind of moving from being tied to your nuclear family, having your self-esteem, your way of seeing yourself being kind of tied up in the close-in world, to moving out beyond that to your peer group and thinking about the world beyond all of that. Hmm. So there are a lot of stresses.
All right, let's talk to Mike and Caroline about this. Let me start with you, Mike, and let me ask the question that Dr. Robbins was asking a moment ago, which is, what kind of pressures do you feel you're under as a teenager at this point?
I don't really feel that many pressures. Just like finding a job is definitely like a pressure, and getting through school, since like there's a lot of different things out there now, and there's like a lot of different things like pulling you out of school. Like, there's a lot of drugs around, of course, like mm-hmm. definitely in Portland too. And I know a lot of kids that sell and like all that type of stuff. And it's just like, you got to find your own way to get through it. So.
And Caroline, by the way, we spent a lot of time this morning agonizing to make sure we got the proper pronunciation yeah. of your first name, but we didn't get the last name quite right. It's Caroline Levy, so that's good. But welcome.
Thank you.
Same question. What kinds of pressures, challenges do you feel you're facing?
I think one of the pressures that I feel the most, I guess it's not really an intense negative pressure, but it's just seeing all of the opportunities that I have as a high school student and that I will have entering college or graduating. And I think for me and the people that I know, we feel almost like this urgent sort of sometimes a little bit stressful desire to do so many different things. And so I think one of the difficulties of that is managing the variety of interests that a teenager might have and feeling the pressure to take advantage of the great opportunities to learn that they are being presented with.
Hmm. Let me ask you, the two of you both, a question kind of about self-awareness. At your age, what do you feel you're good at, accomplished at, and in what areas can you tell that you're still not quite ready for adulthood?
I think that one thing that I've learned how to do is multitask and manage a lot of things at once. I think a skill that I would definitely still want to work on developing and will maybe be more able to do once I'm working professionally is learning how to communicate with different people. And I certainly feel like I've had some of that experience in high school, but I think communication is something, and being able to read people and work with lots of different types of people is a skill that is more part of adulthood.
Mike?
I agree that it's like communicating with people and like understanding and like seeing where people come from is something you kind of learn that in high school too, because there's a lot of different people. But yeah.
All right. We invite you, of course, to join our conversation here this afternoon. Just quickly, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can also tweet us at Maine Calling or email us at talk@mpbn.net. Dr. Robbins, let's go back to that question. Are there some ways in which teenagers, and let me try to nail it down a little bit, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, right in that age bracket, what things are they really accomplished at that we know of?
Well, that's interesting. I think you certainly see a wide variety, of course. Some kids are becoming very good at managing lots of tasks that they have to handle. You see kids managing all their different courses at school while they're working, in some cases outside the home. So many kids, as you know, Caroline mentioned, multitasking, are really doing a remarkable job, and I'm pretty impressed at times by the very different kind of things some kids are handling. At the same time, I think prioritizing is difficult, deciding which of these things to give priority to, where to focus, and sometimes that's where there's conflict with everybody else and with the outside world. And then I think there are some sort of kind of pitfalls. I think the whole world of video games, the world of online relationships and so on, there are ways you can kind of withdraw from the world in a very, very easy way these days and not have to deal with some of the things that might be difficult for you. So in a way, that's one of the things that I think is tempting and difficult currently. I'm curious what Mike and Caroline see, but you see some kids who you know, for most kids, this is not a problem. For kids who are having some trouble, either academically, they don't feel that great in sports or something like that, may go elsewhere to feel good about themselves or to have relationships. And that can become a problem. That can kind of sidetrack their interests and their time.
Hmm. So. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because that's a major part of everybody's life today is our relationship to others through the internet, social media, gaming, that sort of. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing online at this point and whether you feel it's helpful or not?
Well, one of the primary uses for me of mostly Facebook is actually to communicate with other people for school clubs. And that's sort of an interesting change that I've gotten to witness just like pretty much this year and last year, is that a lot of clubs at school have been using Facebook to communicate and to establish meeting times. And I think that's a really positive aspect of it, is that it facilitates that type of organization and communication. At the same time, I do think that, as Dr. Robbins was saying, social media can be a distraction that sort of takes a person's attention away from maybe other priorities.
Mike?
Yeah. I use Facebook to, like, since I have family in different countries, I realize that my family's a lot bigger through Facebook. I've met a lot of people through my family on Facebook, and that's what I pretty much use social media for, is like through family and friends, but relationships not that much, like online and stuff like that. So
interesting. Is the high school environment still stereotyped as a place where there are a lot of different cliques in your school groups?
Yeah, I mean, sports, of course. Sports is, like, separate from, like, a lot of teachers and coaches, and, like, they look at you if you don't, like, play a sport. You're, like, I don't know, they still, like, welcome you to school. Like, they say hi to you and stuff, but they don't talk to you about, like, I don't know. It's separated.
Your contact is limited.
Yeah, the contact is limited between, like, teachers that, like, follow sports and, like, go to the games. Like, I don't do much of, like, the school sports, but I do. I BMX and I snowboard, and so.
Caroline, same question.
I think that there are more cliques freshman and sophomore year, and in middle school, and then as you get to the end of high school and graduation, I think people start doing more mingling, and your interests, like, be it theater or sports, are important, but they don't dictate who you spend your time with.
Okay. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number again, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can also email us, talk@mpbn.net, or you can post to our Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Maine Calling. Let's go ahead and take an early phone call. This is Brian in Brunswick. Brian, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey, thanks for letting me call in. I was wondering if you could maybe give a little more historical context to the idea that it's tougher to be a teenager now than it has been in the past. You kind of raised that as a premise at the top of the show, and the first thing I thought was, you know, my dad, I'm 32 years old, but thinking back to my parents' generation, if you, for example, didn't get into the college of your choice, you were faced with the prospect of going to Vietnam and getting shot at. And I realize juggling social media and, you know, different extracurricular activities is challenging, but I feel like the idea that right now is this uniquely difficult moment to be a teenager, I'm not 100% sure I buy it, so I'm wondering if maybe you guys could elaborate on that.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, Dr. Robbins, is it a question of whether there are more or fewer challenges? Is it always, perhaps, challenging to be a teenager?
Yeah, I think there have always been challenges in this period of time, because it's a time when lots of things are changing. Like, you know, your social and psychological world is changing. As I mentioned, physically and neurologically, you're changing. There's no question there have been major stresses in other times, and we tend to forget that. We tend to have this so-called golden age fallacy that in some sort of good old days, everything was better. But as the caller's just saying, there was there was a war going on. Well, there's a war going on now. That one actually threatened more young people with being drafted and so on. You go back further, a lot of things were different. Think about my parents' generation. Kids worked early on. It wasn't a slam dunk that you just had a comfortable suburban life, and there was a lot more poverty, a lot more disease. A lot of these things we forget about. Nevertheless, I think some changes are challenging now. And again, that's not to say that at a certain point, other time in life, things weren't difficult. I think the economic challenges that put pressures on adults trickle down to teenagers. Now you've got two parents working. You don't have, you know, good old mom at home all the time, maintaining the stability of the household. Now, for many people, that wasn't the case even at another time. It's kind of a fallacy that that's always been the case, but for many people it was. For me, it was. You had more economic stability in the parents in many cases. Dad could be more certain of his job. A mom was more elective. Now it's mandatory in many cases, or necessary to maintain a certain standard of living. So kids have less time with their parents. The phenomenon also of extended families being spread out across the country. Now that's not totally new. It's been there forever, but we're more mobile all the time. And so in the, maybe a couple of generations back, you know, your aunts and your uncles and your cousins, your grandparents were, you know, within a 50-mile radius in many cases, not always, of course. But so there were some alternative people to help you out if you weren't getting along with one parent or another, or if you're having different kinds of struggles. Now, you know, those extended relatives, they might be 3,000 miles away, and everybody dealing with other pressures. So I think there's, in a sense, a lot of challenges and fewer supports. But I agree with the caller. There certainly have been challenges at other times.
All right. Brian, thank you for the call. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more of your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
On the next Backstory, the Second Amendment protects the right to bear arms. And it's true, the founders were worried about citizens losing access to guns. But not quite in the way you might think.
It's not that, you know, somebody's going to come around and knock on doors and take away their guns. It's the state government's not going to give these guys guns or sell them guns at affordable levels.
A History of Gun Ownership on the next Backstory.
Join us for Backstory tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Just a reminder from your friendly public radio station about another service we offer you online at mpbn.net. Our community calendar. This community database essentially offers you choice about what you might want to do. Hundreds of listings about community events, from concerts to openings to exhibits to lectures, workshops, and just about anything. And the great thing about the community calendar is that you can search for what you want by type of event or date or location or a combination. To access the community calendar, visit mpbn.net and click on Community Calendar on the top right-hand side. And of course, if you have an event you'd like to list on the community calendar, instructions are right there on the website as well. Thanks.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratzin, today for Keith Shortall. Today on the program, another in our What Does It Mean series. This time we're looking at what does it mean to be a teenager. With me in the studio, Dr. Doug Robbins. He's director of child and adolescent psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. Caroline Levy is a senior at Falmouth High School. Mike Masick is a senior at Portland High School. We'd like you to join our conversation. You can call us at 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Dr. Robbins was reading a piece that just ran in the Wall Street Journal that said that perhaps one of the things that explains some of what we see in teenage behavior is the fact that at this point in time, they tend to hit puberty, perhaps even a little earlier than they once did. And yet, as you were pointing out before, some portions of brain development don't completely finish until the mid-20s, thus leaving this kind of development gap, if you will.
That's a major issue, and that's very real. It's been known for a long time that for girls, menarche, puberty, was happening steadily earlier. And that's the process that's been going on 20, 30 years, becoming a little bit earlier all along. And it's recently been documented that it's happening with boys, too, that puberty's happening a bit earlier. Now, when puberty happens, all sorts of stresses come into your life. You know, you start just being more conscious of the other sex, you're more self-conscious about yourself, more uncertain about your own, who you are and your own adequacy. And when this is catching you at a time when you're less developed psychologically, mentally, cognitively, you know, able to handle things, it's more of a challenge. So you do see more. It is a matter of kind of observed fact that when you see, and again, this has been studied more in girls because it's been going on for a while, or been identified as being going on for a longer time. But you see more girls having struggles with very early puberty than with kids who mature later. Now, there are stresses, too, with delayed puberty. You know, there are kind of stresses and strains with that. But the time before puberty is a somewhat protected time. You're protected from being viewed as a young adult by the adult world. Expectations are a little bit dampened down, and you're sort of in a more protected matrix for growing. And that slips away a bit when puberty happens. So, yes, that's a very real fact.
Interesting. Mike and Caroline, let me ask you about another issue that crosses my desk all the time, which is the issue of bullying in schools. We hear a lot about that these days. I'm wondering if you've encountered that in your time at school, especially in the last couple of years as a teenager.
Well, I saw more bullying towards me was like in middle school. But once I got to high school, like all through high school, I haven't been really bullied at all. But I see it happen to other kids. It's not like it's not as hard as like people make it out to be. Like, yeah, they get called names, but you don't see people getting thrown in trash cans and like their head dunked in the toilet and stuff. So, but it definitely does happen.
Right. Caroline?
Yeah, I haven't experienced or witnessed bullying in the sense of like really serious threats, but I do think that there is some cruelty that especially happens online because I think it's that whole thing of being behind a screen and being maybe more at ease saying something mean to a person that you would feel less comfortable saying to their face. So I've seen some like teasing and bullying in the sense of just unnecessary meanness, but not really grave threats or anything.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to John from Portland. John, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I was just curious. I don't know if this really applies to sort of the high school community or not, but I've noticed a lot of articles coming out recently about internet pornography and how men in particular in their 30s and 40s are having more and more problems with that as an addiction. And I'm just curious if that, I mean, I know like video games and that sort of thing is a real distraction for high school students, but I'm curious if like internet porn is it all creeped into the high school at that level.
Interesting. Dr. Robbins, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting issue, and I can't really answer that in a factual way, whether to what extent that's a problem. We certainly see some people, some kids, some young people who are getting very preoccupied with this. And I think for most people it's not a problem, and in a way that's kind of interesting and surprising in a positive way that people, because it's so easily available. You know, when I was in school and before to, you know, you had to go down to the corner store and buy a copy of Playboy or something like that, and everybody would know who you were and who did it. So, you know, this is just very private, and it's very easily accessible. See it not being a problem for a lot of people. Potentially, it could be kind of intensifying some preoccupation with sexuality. So I'm not aware of that specifically being a problem, but it certainly could be.
All right. John, thank you for the call. Let's go next to Cindy in Chesterville. Cindy, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I'm just curious about, they probably don't perceive it this way, but I view social media as a lot of pressure in my life, you know, even my humble rural life. And I just wondered whether the teens feel like as if it's their responsibility that they have to go to Facebook every day and maybe Twitter, whatever social media they're involved in. And if so, how much time do they also spend on it per day? And then finally, do they predict that Facebook is on its way out?
All right. Well, we'll get to that one in a moment. What do you think, Mike?
Oh, okay. So I don't think, I mean, I don't post many statuses on Facebook because of pressure. Like, people think about likes and who's not going to like it, and I don't want to look like a, I don't know, a loner if I post a status and it doesn't get many likes. But, yeah, there definitely is. There's some pressure. I mean, like posting certain pictures, like you worry about what people think of it. Well, I do. Mm. But, yeah, so.
That's kind of a positive question. Pressure. Carolina, one of the other things she was mentioning that I'm wondering, a lot of adults think of I hear a lot of adults say that they think of Facebook as a tremendous time sink. They can spend a lot of time on it. Do you find that it takes too much of your time? Or?
I do think that it can be a distraction. I remember like when I first got Facebook, I was spending like a lot more time on it than I am now. I know people that spend more time on it than I do, and I know people who spend less time. But I think regardless of sort of how much time you're spending each day online, I think what the caller said is a really good point, that it can create some anxiety. I think a lot of people feel that sort of nagging feeling to just like maintain their Facebook page or check their email regularly and just stay on top of that. And sometimes if you go a couple of days without doing that, they might cause some anxiety.
Yeah,
interesting. And you were saying before that you find you use Facebook a lot these days for communications with clubs to set up meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to hear you're actually still meeting. That's so good. All right, Cindy, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Damon in Portland. Damon, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was just thinking about when I started listening, you were talking about the brain not being fully developed, and I had learned some of this about it as I was bringing up my daughter, about the frontal lobe taking a very long time to develop and talking about the challenges involved with that. But I think what's interesting is to think about is what are the advantages of that? And I was thinking about things like, well, if you look at Facebook and Google, they have these very youth-oriented cultures. And I don't think it's just because young people, the people that are learning the skills, but I think it's because they find that young people are less adverse to taking risks and can be more creative. And a lot of this could be contributed to the incomplete development of the frontal lobe, I think. And I think nature's pretty smart that way. You know, I think there's a lot of advantages to that. Hmm. I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay. Thanks very much. Dr. Robbins,
well,
you want
to comment? You know, there are pluses and minuses to just about anything. To have some people in our society who are less averse to taking risks and going to try new things, that can be an advantage. There's an interesting way of thinking about, for instance, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Maybe 1,000 years ago, if we're out hunting in the woods, to have somebody alongside who's going to shoot first and ask questions later is not a bad thing, you know. And so impulsivity might have its advantages. Now, if I'm doing a job that requires me sticking to learning a technical manual for 60 minutes at a stretch, that's a major problem. So there are pluses and minuses to that. But so that's a very interesting point the caller is making, that there may be some kind of evolutionary or adaptive advantages to the way the brain functions when it's not quite yet ready to come out of the oven, in a sense. They're not really fully done.
Interesting. If you'd like to join our conversation, do take a moment, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We are talking about being a teenager. I was curious from Mike and Caroline. We've been talking from time to time about some of the negative influences on teens, the things you worry about, the challenges that are out there. What are the positive influences? Caroline, go ahead.
I think one really great thing about being a teenager is that there are so many people who are really invested in your success. I think that, like, teachers and school administrators and, like, for most people, their family is a really great source of encouragement and support. I think that's a really positive aspect of sort of being a teenager and growing up.
Mike?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people, like, there's a lot of people helping you get through your teenage years, and they're like, it's teenage years are, I don't know, I kind of, I had something to say before this, but I kind of...
That's all right. Do you feel kind of... I mean, I'm trying to extrapolate from what Caroline was saying. Do you still feel kind of protected as a teenager? By parents, by school structures?
Definitely. Like, home is still a base you can go to for, like, protection. And, like, school is, too, because, like I said, there's a lot of people that, like, back you up and help you get through the teenage years. And, yeah.
You know, I think it's worth saying that that to some extent, this is an understandable point of view in Maine. In a lot of parts of the world, this is not the way it feels. You know, let's say, and you don't have to go very far away, let's say lower, you know, poorer socioeconomic groups or places where there are more pressures on the adult generation, there's less support than for the teenagers. And there are less people watching out for you. There are people kind of preoccupied with making it or surviving themselves. So, you know, and in a sense, it's kind of obvious, but it's not always, I think what we're hearing from Caroline and Mike is the way we want it to be. And I think Maine is very fortunate that way in being relatively stable from a socioeconomic perspective. Even though we're not a wealthy state, we are a stable state in many respects. And that produces this kind of protection for kids, which I think is a very good thing. You know, you just go to a more inner city group or in many cases rural poverty, which is certainly alive and well in Maine. You may find less protection and kids more having a sense that they're on their own.
All right. We're going to take another short break, and when we return, we'll have more of your comments and questions. Please stay tuned. This is Maine Calling.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Sonia Sotomayor is the first Hispanic and third woman appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Justice Sotomayor, on her journey from a Bronx housing project to the nation's highest court.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show this afternoon at 2 o'clock. As you know, many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on the MPBN radio service. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting MPBN, either on MPBN radio or MPBN television, visit our website, mpbn.net. Click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions and contact information, or give us a call at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine. Join us at 1 o'clock immediately following Maine Calling for Ideas from the CBC. Today's program, The Longevity Puzzle. In a cluster of quiet mountain villages in Sardinia, Italy, something unusual is happening. A remarkable number of people are living into their hundreds. That's Ideas from the Canadian Broadcasting Company this afternoon at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Erwin Gratz. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today we're talking about the life of a teenager. With me in the studio, Dr. Doug Robbins, Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center, Caroline Levy, a senior at Falmouth High School, and Mike Masick, a senior at Portland High School. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-399-3566, email talk at mpbn.net, post to our Facebook page, or tweet at Maine Calling. Dr. Robbins, I wanted to ask you about a trait that we sometimes see in the teenage years, a kind of a sullenness that will emerge. It's funny, I can remember from my own childhood one day when I was about 16, we were living a half a block from the beach. It was a nice, hot, sunny summer day, and my mother's trying to get me to go to the beach, and all I really wanted to do is just sit on the porch in the shade. And she clearly couldn't understand it. Frankly, I couldn't understand it. But what's going on there?
Well, that's interesting. You know, there's you'd say a range or a spectrum the degree of that or severity. I'd say there's an element of that that relates to depression, which, and one of the components of depression is simply losing interest in things, not feeling like doing anything, not necessarily even subjectively feeling that you're sad. I mean, I may say, I feel fine, but I just feel like sitting on the porch and doing nothing. Now, if that goes on for an afternoon, it's no big deal, and it's a very common thing that, you know, all of us have changes in our moods. They wax and wane and things change for all sorts of reasons. If that were to persist, let's say, you know, 2 weeks go by, a month goes by, you're still sitting on the porch and you're choosing not to do things with your friends. You don't feel like going to school. You don't feel like doing your homework. Then you start wondering whether this is becoming significant. And probably then some counseling or support might make a big difference in kind of helping somebody out of that. Now, the isolated time instance of what you're describing is probably of no significance in terms of leading to further trouble. Mm-hmm. But it'd be something to be aware of, and it's probably something – and probably reasonable for adults to be aware that teenagers will have ups and downs, as do adults, by the way, and anybody else. Anyway, I'm interested in –
concession.
How the rest of you feel about that?
Any other comments about that?
Just say I think that sort of learning how to manage moodiness and just being surprised sometimes by how you feel and learning how to cope with that is something that I feel like I've learning how to do as a teenager.
I've had something similar when, like, people go to the beach during the summertime, and it's, like, hot, and I'm hot, too, but I just want to, like, sit in the shade. But I'd like to go to the beach, but it's just, like, I'd rather just sit home and not go. But it's, like, yeah, it's something you got to learn how to, like, deal with it. Maybe you should just try to push yourself.
Interesting. All right, let's go back to the phones. This is Elaine in Surrey. Elaine,
hello.
Good afternoon. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm the parent of a 14-year-old high school freshman, and he's my only child. And I have some friends who have girls, and there seems to be, the stories I hear from them, there seems to be a stark difference between the way that girls and boys experience social life in high school. And for the girls, there seems to be a great deal more of anxiety and difficulty, navigating, different cliques, and I just hear some terrible stories, and my son doesn't seem to be experiencing any of this unless there's something I'm missing somewhere. And I wondered if you could talk about, the issues that you experience socially in high school, girls versus boys.
Okay. Caroline, you want to start us off?
I think the stereotype is a little bit true that girls tend to be more catty, a little more... a little more cruel to each other than boys. I think boys are more blunt about how they feel. However, I think also maybe girls are more inclined to be a little bit louder about sort of like the drama in their life and to play that up, whereas boys, if they are experiencing issues with friends, might keep that more to themselves.
What do you think, Mike?
What was the question?
I guess the question is, do you feel like you have any tougher time socially than girls do in high school?
Not really. I mean, if I've had my friends coming from middle school to high school, and like you know your friends. I don't know. It's like between of what people do. It's like what their interests are. Like if some people like going out on Saturday nights and like going to party with their friends, or some people just like hanging out playing video games in their basement. So it's like. That's how it's separated up for me. I don't know.
All right. Okay. Let's go to Chris in East Machias. Chris, good afternoon. You're on Main Calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is movies. It's mainly to Michael and Carolyn, but the doctor also. There's a lot of cinema devoted to your age group, and ranging from The Hunger Games on one end of the spectrum and The Perks of Being a Wallflower on the other end. Do you feel any of it accurately reflects who you are, or is it just a fantasy world?
That's a good question. Caroline?
I think that's an interesting question. I haven't watched The Hunger Games, but I have watched Perks of Being a Wallflower, so I can speak to that one, that I think it is the Perks of Being a Wallflower sort of, I think, like, exposed one aspect of being a teenager, which is that, it's sort of this process where you're, I guess, searching like for yourself and getting to know yourself, without that sounding too cliche, but so I think that aspect of that movie is true for the age group. I think that's an interesting question because movies are a source of entertainment, but they're also maybe fairly accurate sometimes about.
I didn't watch The Perks of a Wildflower, but I watched The Hunger Games.
There we go.
And I don't know. I think the Hunger Games shows that it's like whoever's stronger gets to the top. But then again, there was the one strong kid that like everybody was scared of. But I mean, they got around it by working together. I don't know. It's like I don't know where I'm going with this. I kind of knew, but then.
Well, Dr. Robbins, let me ask you. I mean, the caller was asking, do movies accurately portray young people at this age?
I say yes and no. I think it's, movies are wanting us to buy tickets and go to the theater. So they're going to try to appeal to us, obviously, and be interesting. And I think to some extent that happens by exaggerating a little bit some of the the pressures, which are in fact there, you know, or the identities. So it may take a stereotype and kind of amp it up a little bit, make it a little more intense. Nevertheless, I think it's reflecting some pressures, some stereotypical issues, some conflicts of the age group that are in fact kind of universal themes.
All right, let's go to our next caller. This is Kathleen in Farmington. Kathleen, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. This is directed to Dr. Robbins. What about teenagers who hate school and don't want to be there and don't feel supported by the teachers and the administration? And if they had their druthers, they wouldn't go.
That's a very, very important thing. And while as well as the kind of supports and structure for this time of life work for many kids, there are many kids who don't do so well. And I think somebody like that really needs to be looked at in a very careful way. There might be some anxiety about certain situations, social situations, or anxieties about learning secondary to some learning disabilities or learning problems. This might reflect tension in other areas of their life. But all of those things just as I'm mentioning them, those are all significant things which are not going to typically just go away or resolve by themselves. So I think it's really important for parents in the school to be sitting down and getting together to figure out what to do about that. Does the kid need special support of some kind? Some kind of supportive counseling, testing to see if they're overlooking some learning difficulty. But I think it's important to get on that right away. And, you know, the mechanism that's out there is for a parent to ask for what they call an IEP, Individualized Education Plan. And the school is required by law to respond to that request by setting up a meeting to discuss what's going on. I think to just let somebody kind of sit at home and hope that they'll come to their senses and go to school at some point often does not work out. It's also fortunately or unfortunately, you know, in the good old days, I suppose there's a big deal about truancy. If somebody didn't go to school, society got upset about that and would sort of send people to your house to make you go to school or get after your parents to make you go to school or whatever. And nowadays, social structures of various kinds, the town, the school, they have so many other things they're needing to deal with. It's very likely that somebody experiencing the kind of trouble you're describing may be kind of just neglected and allowed to kind of sit there and not make any progress with that. So I think it's important to get after that.
All right. That's going to be our last word for this afternoon. Dr. Robbins, thank you very much. And let me thank Caroline, Mike as well. We've been speaking with Dr. Doug Robbins, Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. Caroline Levy is a senior at Falmouth High School. Mike Masick, a senior at Portland High. Good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Today's program was produced by our volunteers Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Cindy answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. Tomorrow on the program, smoking in Maine. We'll hear about the latest research into the dangers of smoking and hear tips about how to kick the habit. I'm Erwin Gratz in for Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling here on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Have a good afternoon.